This is the Drinks Adventures podcast. James Atkinson here, and this week I play a conversation with Heather Tillett, production manager at Sullivan's Cove Distillery in Tasmania. If you have any awareness of Australian whiskey, you've surely heard of Sullivan's Cove, known internationally for some of the incredible accolades it's won over the last few years. In March 2018, Sullivan's Cove won World's Best Single Cask Single Malt for its American Oak Cask at the highly prestigious World Whiskies Awards. This followed the distiller's French Oak Expression being named World's Best Single Malt outright at the World Whiskies Awards in 2014. Now, for an Australian distiller to win one of these awards is remarkable, but two in such a short space of time is really quite stupendous. I caught up with Heather at Sullivan's Cove earlier this year.
My name is Heather Tillett. I started in the beverage industry and wine production in the New South Wales Shoalhaven region. And then after a life change, I just wanted to move to Tassie. Thought I'd continue in wine here, but as it turned out, I kind of just fell into distilling by chance when I moved down here, just exploring what was happening in the beverage scene. I came here and tasted the whiskey one afternoon because I thought, well, you know, everyone's raving about the Tasmanian whiskey, I might give it a go, and completely fell in love.
Now, March this year, Sullivan's Cove's American Oak was named World's Best Single Cask Single Malt, the World Whiskies Awards. Yep. And obviously 4 years ago, the French Oak won World's Best Single Malt outright, same awards.
Yep, yep.
What was the atmosphere like at the distillery when the latest accolade came through?
Really surreal. Pat McGuire, our head distiller, he was over at the awards in London texting us photos of these awards. We were just looking at them like, oh my God, really? What? We won. That was really bizarre. To be honest, I feel like it hasn't really sunk in yet, even the gravity of it, because we're the team as a whole is a really, let's just get on with it and do a good job. I'm going to, you know, head down sort of work ethic, but we were all just looking at each other, kind of laughing. It was really cool. Really, really cool. Over the moon.
What's harder, making the ultimate expression of the French oak or American oak, or making the double cask, which obviously involves the blending exercise?
It's harder in the sense to find a single cask, because when you think about it, it's just there's not that many, and it's almost like you're just fishing. You're fishing, you're throwing lines out, you're just trying to find each barrel when it's at its peak. And you know there's some barrels that might not make it to the single cask level. And so you've kind of got them in your pool of double cask potential barrels. But to find a barrel that is at its peak of balance, complexity, texture, structure, characteristics like the nose and the palate at a sweet spot is just a feat of nature. It's an absolutely amazing feat of nature. And you can nurture it and kind of help it in its direction. But finding it at that point takes a long time of tasting and nosing and kind of following its journey. So that's really hard in one sense, but in the blending exercise is really time-consuming and bizarrely mentally exhausting when you're using your nose and your palate in such an intense way. It takes a long time of tweaking and pulling bits and bobs from certain barrels together and matching barrels together. It's surprisingly exhausting. Every time I do it, it surprises me, the mental exercise that goes on. Just from using your nose so much.
And so that's for the double cask?
Yeah, for the double cask or for forthcoming blended of brandy, yeah.
And what do you think is giving Sullivan's Cove whiskies the edge that have won these amazing accolades?
Look, I really think it comes down to time in a barrel. We're using full-sized barrels and we're aging for quite substantial periods of time. We're looking at substantial age in the barrel, full-size casks. So I really think time is a huge, huge part of it. Also, we've got a pretty low intervention way of like working with our spirit as well. So we're not chill filtering. That's a really big thing that you'll hear Sullivan's talking about a lot. We don't chill filter. We leave a lot of those all of those haze forming particles that hold a lot of flavour and texture and aroma in the whiskey. So you're getting raw whiskey, for lack of a better term, which is a really, really cool thing. You're getting everything from the grain, from the ferment, from the distillation, from the maturation, and from, you know, careful diluting and dealing with the spirit after maturation. So it's a cared for product.
And how does that compare to, you know, commercial single malt production?
Not to say that those whiskies haven't got care that's gone into them, but because we're on a smaller scale and we can do these processes like on a like barrel by barrel basis, it's a bit easier for us. On a large scale, obviously they're looking at large scale exporting and whatnot, and visually they would like their whiskies to look the same every time, for example. So, you know, adding food colouring is a great way on that scale to get the similarity across bottles and each of them look the same, for example. But also with chill filtering, I mean, they don't want to have haze particles in their whiskey. So from a large scale commercial perspective, it makes sense. And I think there's room in the market for both. We're just very adamant about where we are in it.
And obviously Sullivan's Cove is known for those three main products. Are there any other different and innovative whiskies that you plan to release in the future?
Yeah, look, certainly we've got the three main in the range. We do have the special cask label, which, you know, from time to time we'll release a quirky but brilliant whiskey in. And certainly upcoming, we will be releasing some 300-litre American oak ex-tawny matured single malts. So that's a bit different. It's a bit of an in-betweener for us. Usually we're using French oak ex-tawny and American oak ex-bourbon, but it's an American oak ex-tawny cask. So they're a really cool whiskey that's coming out. You're getting all the American oak vanilla-driven sweetness plus a tawny hit, so it's kind of vineyardy as well. It's really interesting. We're also releasing brandies at the moment, some XO brandies, which is really lovely. We're doing predominantly single cask at the moment, but we will be releasing a blended brandy shortly.
Were you a brandy enthusiast prior to, having this brandy to work with?
I was, which makes me very excited. I think, like, my palate, I'm more geared toward, you know, your fine Armagnacs and Cognacs and Calvados. They're my spirits of choice. So, yeah, really excited. Yeah.
What's the best thing about the job?
I actually think it's being able to see a product go through so many transitions. That for me is like the crafting element of it. So you can, you know, you can see the grain, you can cover the ferment, you can watch the ferment, and then running it through the still a number of times. You know, you're purifying it each time, and then you've got this new make that you put into a barrel. There's just transitions each and every step of the way. It sits in the barrel for many moons, years and years and years and years. And watching whiskey change and mature in the barrel is absolutely phenomenal. And then to work with that spirit, to find its sweet spot, whether it be a single cask or to work it with other whiskies to create complexity and balance and the structure that you're after to create a good blend. And then see it in a bottle. It's an amazing journey to watch.
Obviously with, French oak and American oak, on the one hand you're expressing a single cask, but on the other you're trying to look for a level of consistency.
Absolutely.
Across those releases. How much do they tend to vary from release to release, bottle to bottle?
Oh, look, bottle to bottle or barrel to barrel.
Barrel to barrel is what I meant.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Certainly there's always going to be a fairly big spectrum of differences. I mean, they're always going to be familiar, right? There's always going to be that, hey, that's like a Sullivan's Cove French oak smell, right? But barrel to barrel, you'll find some are more spicy, some have a bit more of a fruity note, some are, sweeter, some more savoury. So there's differences in that, but there's always that common thread of Sullivan's Cove spirit that goes through them. Absolutely, yeah. And of course, when we're looking at releasing them, there's obviously, you know, they have to meet like our quality standards to get out the door in the first place, of course. But yeah, there's certainly, think of them as people. They're it's like a family, you know, they're all related, so they're all similar, but they're all really quirky and different too.
Given the demand for Sullivan's Cove whiskey, has there been quite a big focus on trying to put more whiskey down so that hopefully at some point in the future it'll be a little bit more available? Because I understand that right now each time a new cask gets released, it pretty much just gets sold right away.
most certainly does. Yes, demand is massive, but that's okay. I mean, we're certainly not going to start releasing whiskey when it's not ready. It's just not something we're going to do. It defeats the purpose, really. So, we're in a bit of a drought at the moment. That's going to continue for a bit. That's okay. But certainly we are putting down more now, yes. So we have a fairly intense production schedule now. Of course, that, you know, to see the fruit of that, we're going to have to wait at least a decade. But, yeah, that's the nature of the game, nature of the industry. You're thinking in the past and in the future all at once, and on a couple of decades either way. It's a really bizarre thing.
How do you think Sullivan's Cove fits into the world whiskey scene stylistically?
I guess the way I see it, and this is probably coming just from like a production kind of point of view, is that our setup, we've got a really bizarre still for single malt. First of all, it's a still that stylistically is like, you know, cognac. Like we're running a Charente Alembic still, which is like, to look at, you'd be like, hey, that's what they make cognac with. It's not your classic single malt still. So we get because of that, we've got a worm tub condenser, which is a really old school, rustic way of condensing your new make, which gives you a rustic kind of barnyardy spirit. It's meatier. There's more sulfur that comes through, for example. So you get a very intense new make. There's not that many distilleries out there that have still got this type of condenser. A lot of them are, you know, more efficient, you know, shell and tube or shotgun kind of condensers. So I think of distilleries like Mortlach, the beast of Speyside, right? So you, gorgeous, gorgeous whiskey. There's always those sweet, honeyed, floral and spicy notes, but it's broad on the palate. It's more sulfur in it. It's a bit more rustic, and it's a bit richer. But I think Tasmania and like Sullivan's, for example, is a really interesting thing to think about because we've got our own region, we've got our own terroir that no one else has. And in that sense, we're really unique.
What role does terroir actually play, though?
In spirits?
In Sullivan's Cove whiskey specifically.
Look, I think the grain we use, Tasmanian barley is a really, really interesting one because the strains that we use in Tasmania are historically brewing strains. So they've got less carbohydrate, more protein in the actual grain. So there's less alcohol yield, still enough obviously to make it viable to distill and use as an industry, of course, but there's less carbohydrate and there's more flavour. There's a lot more fat content in them. So we're dealing with a very flavoursome base ingredient, a very fatty flavoursome base ingredient. We have a fairly low and slow kind of approach to distilling, and so we're getting a fairly soft spirit coupled at Sullivan's with this, the worm tub condenser kind of meaty, rustic spirit. And then you're chucking it in a barrel for a long time. So I think through all that, you do still have a sense of place from the barley. The whiskey that we decant from the casks, we don't chill filter. There's a lot of the haze-forming compounds in there. There's a lot of flocculant, which is a classic term you'll hear. So they're long-chain fatty acid esters that have been formed, you know, in the ferment, distillation process and the maturation. But of course, because the barley had a lot more of the fatty compounds, like particularly the fatty acids, there's a lot more of it in there, which means you get a very viscous spirit, a very, very viscous spirit, a lot of flavour. And I'd absolutely attribute that to the type of barley we're using and where we are.
We tried a whiskey earlier on that was the ex-French white wine casks.
Yeah, right, yep.
What's that series of releases and are there likely to be more in that series?
Certainly. So we've got some other barrels of that type down. We're not sure exactly how we're going to release them at this stage. I mean, the label that we've released this one under is a special cask label, and so it's, it's for quirky barrels that don't really fit in our main range, but it's not just because they're quirky, right? They've got to be crackers. Like just something that absolute standouts, really, really cool. So that's where this one has come in for this particular barrel. We do have others of that type and we're open to playing with them. I mean, I think one of the things we're very adamant about is letting the barrel tell us how to release it, not trying to pigeonhole it into something that we want it to be.
So what are you most enjoying drinking outside of Sullivan's Cove at the moment?
Fine cognac, going through a phase. But certainly I've been actually exploring my own backyard a bit more. See, I'll always go to cognac, right? Cognac and Armagnac, but exploring Tasmanian Pinot a bit more lately and really enjoying it. There's some really cool stuff happening around Tassie.
Can you see yourself working in the wine industry again, or has whiskey got you now?
Oh, I think so at some stage later on down the track, but, you know, I don't think I ever want to be without a still. Yeah, I think whiskey got me.
Listening to you describing some of the aromatics of some of the whiskies we tried earlier, it's very obvious how talented you are at nosing. What sort of work have you actually put into that, or is that just something you were naturally gifted in?
I don't know. I guess I've got a fairly sensitive palate anyway. But I've certainly put a lot of work into just developing that in my own time. And a lot of the time that just looks like, obviously, nosing and tasting a lot of wine, various spirits, various beverages, but also not just beverages. But I think a lot of it is just comes down to a way of thinking about the world. You know, you walk outside every morning and instead of just being like, oh, yeah, it's a nice day, actually stopping and being quiet and smelling and thinking about what you can smell, just being mindful about what's happening in your senses, really. What are you feeling, smelling, tasting, hearing? So sometimes I might go buy a packet of lollies or whatever and just think on it. Taste them all, smell them all, think on it. You know, go to the botanic gardens, have a rose day or have a vegetable patch day or a leaf day or go to a coffee cupping or go to a tea emporium or something and just expand the palate, not just in beverages but in general. Yeah, go to a spice shop. That's my favourite.
Red jelly beans, one of the tasting notes that you came up with earlier.
Yeah, the red jelly beans.
Cookie dough is another one.
Cookie dough, that's correct. Yep. It's pretty funny sometimes the things that your brain comes up with when you put that much effort into thinking all the time about what you're smelling. You know, it scares me sometimes. Like I did had one earlier when you were like, what the hell? I was like, it smells like the sand on a hot day at the beach. Like, I think sometimes maybe I've gone too far.
All right, well, Heather, been a fascinating chat. Thanks so much for your time.
No,
we'll leave it there.
Pleasure. Thank you.
It's that time of the program where I ask for your help as listeners of the Drinks Adventures podcast. Please take a moment to drop the show an honest review on iTunes or Stitcher. It's great hearing your feedback and will hopefully let other podcast listeners know that this show is worth checking out. You can find all other shows, show notes, transcripts and many helpful links on the podcast website, drinksadventures.com.au, and you can email me at hello@drinksadventures.com.au. I'll see you again next week.